Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Jeffrey and Christine Smith. They are from Alaska and are here to give a talk at the Lafayette Public Library, the Southern Regional Library, this Sunday, February 25th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. You can find out more at the Lafayette Public Library's website. They are here to talk about boat building, particularly wooden boat building. They have a wooden boat called the David B. Christine has written a book about the restoration of the boat and your adventures on the boat. So that's really what you all will be talking about, your life in Alaska on this boat, what you did to put together the boat and what all that entails. So it's really nice to have you here. We were having kind of a great chat before about the love people have for boats here in South Louisiana. And you all were talking about some of the surprising connections that different boat building places in the country have with each other. So we'll learn a bit more about that. So welcome to South Louisiana and a place that, again, I know will respond very favorably to what you have to say. Tell us just a bit about your background. Neither of you are from Alaska, but you ended up there. Tell us how you both got there. Maybe start off, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I actually began my boating career on the coast of Maine. I worked on these big schooners that carry passengers on week-long trips out there. And then I moved on from doing that to working on the Great Lakes for a little bit. And then I worked on the Columbia River between running out of Portland, Oregon for a while. And then moved on to the Puget Sound area, moving up to a place called Bellingham, Washington. And at that point, I'd been working long enough. I'd been captain on a couple boats working up to that. And that's actually where I met Christine. We have a cute little story of meeting a friend.
On the boat?
No. A friend set us up to meet at a bar. And I didn't know anything about it. I was just told that I was going out with him and his friends. But Christine had been well warned about me, and when we met, she told me that she was looking in her life to start some little bed and breakfast, and I asked her if it had to have a foundation or if it could float.
That was great.
That was a great comeback, yes.
Isn't that a good line? I've always thought that was a good line.
You don't think about that, you know? You probably were thinking of a traditional one, and there you meet someone who set you off in another path. Well, I have to say, Jeffrey, just what you sketched out right there, you know, so many of us don't understand all of the walks of life that are available when you have a certain interest in. You just talked about the most amazing array of places that you've worked and different types of places where you can work on boats and captain boats and do a variety of different things on boats. You know, sometimes when you're from one particular area or you're kind of a layperson in regard to that area, you don't think about the variety of types, boats or types of work that you can get in that field.
It's actually a pretty small group of people throughout the country who are working on boats, and obviously there are only places along the coast and on the lakes and on the rivers.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a small community, and so the people do move around quite a bit, or they can if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
We were actually talking in a few minutes just before this about how many people that I know from Washington and from Alaska who've spent time working on the Gulf or who've spent time working on the East Coast in part of their boating career.
How interesting. Well, I'm sure some people will wonder how you ended up here giving a talk and wondering if there are some connections in that boat building world that drew you down here.
We actually have been traveling around giving talks like this, and
mm-hmm.
we had some guests who'd been on the boat with us who lived here in Louisiana and invited us to come stay with them and give a talk. And so that was about 4 years ago, four or five. And so we've been back through this area a couple times doing this kind of thing. And it's interesting for us, we have a pretty strong connection to this area of Louisiana in terms of the number of guests who have come with us.
Their way up there,
yeah,
to Alaska. Well, let's talk about your boat. It is called the David B. How old a boat is it?
The boat was built in 1929, and it was originally built in the Lake Washington shipyards in what's now Kirkland, Washington, which is on the east side of Seattle.
Now, and you know so much because you did end up writing a book about the David B.
I did,
yes.
Yeah.
Sort of its history and then how it was restored, I guess. So how did you, I guess you encountered the boat first? Did you discover the boat before you met Christine, or was this a mutual discovery?
Well, we were already together, but in order, we bought a boat together, and then we got a house together, and then we got married
in that order. Okay. So you've been there since the acquisition of the boat, the David B.
Yes.
What attracted you to this particular boat and made you realize this is the boat you wanted to dedicate yourself to?
It is interesting to say it that way, dedicate mm-hmm. ourselves. I don't think we would have said it that way at the mm-hmm. beginning, but mm-hmm. that is what we've kind of done. We were looking for a boat. We were not very wealthy. We'd actually tried to raise money to build a new boat, and our plans kind of fell apart. We'd gotten quite a ways with that, but our plans fell apart during the dot-com bust. And so our plan to raise money that way hadn't worked out. And so we were looking for something cheap that we could put our energy into restoring. And when we found the David B., one of the things that really captivated me for that particular boat was that it had its original engine from 1929, which is this old, slow-turning diesel engine that we've been able to keep running. And it's our main engine. It's our source of power.
So you kept that original engine. I mean, for people who know much about boats, I mean, how big is this engine? How
it's interesting because it is really big physically. Mm-hmm. It's actually 100 horsepower, but it stands as tall as Christine. And the engine room is probably, I don't know, it's probably 8 or 9 feet long in the engine room. And it's actually a very simple version of a diesel engine. It works the same way as modern diesel engines, but it was built during an era when the designers were still thinking a lot about steam engines. And so the engineers put all the working parts like the push rods and the rockers and everything on the outside. But it's essentially the same thing. And we use it about 1,000 hours a season, a little more than that between there and 1,500. And it's supposed to last about 100,000 hours before you're even supposed to have to do a major overhaul. And we're only about 30,000 hours into that.
So how do you get parts for an engine that's nearly 100 years old?
Luckily, there are machine shops. You take the broken ones in your hands with your sad face to the machine shop, and you show them what it is. And if you're lucky, the people at the machine shop aren't young people, but they're people who've been there a long time. And they nod knowingly, and then they make you new things. Yeah, it is interesting though, because when we're out operating, we are pretty much the only ones who have that kind of engine anywhere nearby. There are a few other boats that have old engines, mm-hmm. but in general, we're the only ones. So we're also the engineers on the boat, keeping it running.
Well, Christine, when you were writing the book, did you want to do a history of the David B.? Was it just a description of the restoration of this wooden boat? How is the book structured?
It's a little bit of both. When I was encouraged to write it, we'd tell people lots of stories about, oh, and we did this, and we did this, and we did this. And somebody finally said, you know, you really need to write all this down. And we're like, okay. And I'm not a writer. I didn't start out as a writer, but the woman who was really encouraging, she said, you know, you just kind of, you know, find an editor. They can help you out with the rest of it. So I said, okay, I'm
like
game with
that.
Find
a good machine shop for words.
Exactly. That is exactly it. And so as I was trying to decide what I wanted to write, I knew I wanted to write about how we restored the boat, but I also wanted to write about that first trip up from Bellingham, which is where the boat is moored in the winter, and then up to Alaska for the first time. But I didn't want to do just a story that started off, we bought the boat, we painted the boat, we tore some stuff out, we found some, and did a timeline, yeah. So what I worked on doing is having both stories of the restoration and the going north story sort of woven together. And so that's kind of how that mm-hmm. all came together.
And I have to say, I love the title, More Faster Backwards.
Anybody who's owned a wooden boat knows exactly the feeling when you have a wooden boat.
You go more faster backwards.
Yeah, ever increasingly faster going backwards.
That's wonderful. So what did you do to first restore? I mean, what shape was it in when you encountered this boat?
It was pretty much a wreck. It was a derelict. It was owned by a guy who was basically holding on to it, trying to find somebody who would take it over and restore it. He had several other boats from the same era that he was also kind of just tending. And he's one of the people we credit with the boat living on, because a lot of boats from that era wouldn't have made it. And it was good that he was there. But he was basically looking for somebody to take it over. And so we looked at it, and it was in our price range.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big
mm-hmm.
part of it. Yeah. And we looked at it, and I had done some work doing boat building stuff in Maine. And so I knew that it was possible. There are quite a few boats in Maine that were in worse shape than that were brought back to run as passenger boats. So,
So what did you have to do first? I mean, most of us who don't know boats don't. I mean, how bad a shape was it? What did you have to do?
Well, like all things,
to make it work?
It was a little bigger project than we thought it was going to be. But our first project was, we had the anchor windlass, the thing you pull the anchor up with. It was on the beach, and the deck was rotten. The foredeck was rotten. And so we had to our first project was to replace the foredeck and then get the windlass on the beach so that we could take it back to Bellingham. And the boat we found out on Lopez Island, which is in the San Juan Islands in Washington State. So we had some work to do there, and that was probably – I think we were there from June until February of 99. And it took us that much time to get the foredeck done and then bring it to Bellingham. And then we did all the work there. And then we spent a good 8 years total doing the restoration.
That is dedication.
We also thought that it would take about 2 years.
And it took you eight.
And it took eight. And during that time, there were lots of times where we were ready to give up on it, and we didn't have any more money. We weren't actually living on board it, which I think with a lot of people, when they try something like this, they live aboard, and that makes it even more discouraging because you have to work.
Or maybe work faster.
Yeah, you have to work, and there's sawdust in your in where you're living.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we were able to come back from each one of the moments where we thought we were going to give up.
And in taking so long to build it, did you find that there were just some extremely difficult problems, or that you found yourself so, I guess, becoming more and more attached to this boat and just wanting to do a really good job restoring it? What would you say is...
I'd say maybe a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I think there were times where the biggest problem was time and money. So sometimes you'd have a little bit of money, but you wouldn't have the time to do it. And then by the time you had the time to do it, then you didn't have the money anymore. And that was one of our biggest things that we ran up against.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we did want to do a really good job. And so we didn't want to rush through it. We wanted to make sure that when it was done, it would be, you know, a very beautiful boat.
Okay. Well, give us a sense of how large the boat is and what's in the boat. Like if you walked on it, describe it.
So it's 65 feet long, and when you come aboard, you can walk around all the way around the outside of the house that's on the main deck level there. When you first step on board, you can step right over a threshold into the galley. We have a galley that Christine cooks on a traditional style of wood-fired cook stove, the galley also has the seating area in there for our guests. And then inside there you can make your way forward through a little pantry area. And then we have a big saloon area. We decided to name it a saloon.
Okay, that sounds romantic.
We found some old plans. Lots of boats have a salon. It's just a matter of an O.
Ah,
but
okay. Sounds more Western.
Well, yeah, and a friend of ours told us that he has a boat that has that space and he never gets his hair cut there. But he does drink beer there.
Okay.
So we found some old plans actually from the same designer that had named a space like that, the saloon. So there's a big saloon area, and it has windows on both sides, big windows that we actually designed so that you could be seated in there on the two settees and the big chair that's in there and see out. And then you can go farther forward and you're up in the pilot house.
Mm-hmm.
And from right at that space at the pilot house, you can also go down a staircase. And down below in that area, there are four staterooms that three have a queen-size bed and one has bunk beds. And then everybody has their own little bathroom connected to their stateroom.
Mm-hmm. Did you do all this work yourself, or did you have some help, like plumbers?
Yes and yes. Yeah. I mean, we basically supervised and or did all of the work that's on there. A couple of the different times during the timeline of the project, we've had to have other people as part of it. And then we've also had tons and tons of help from friends and family. Mm-hmm. Christine's parents are actually at the boat
right now
painting while we're here. And it's 24 degrees right now in Washington, and they're there painting on the inside while we're enjoying the 78 degrees of
Louisiana. It sounds like other people developed a great passion for this project as well, in addition to yourselves. I want to tell people who may be tuning in and finding themselves fascinated by your project, my guests are Jeffrey and Christine Smith from Alaska. They have connections here in South Louisiana and have been invited down to give a talk at the Lafayette Public Library. That talk will be this Sunday at 2 o'clock at the South Regional Library, which is on Johnston Street. So 2 o'clock, all are invited to attend. I imagine you'll be showing some slides of the boat. You'll have images of the boat there, and you'll have the book that you've written. Christine wrote a book about the restoration of the David B called More Faster Backwards, Rebuilding David B, about the David B's restoration. So I imagine you will have some
of
those.
There will be books there.
There will be books at the library.
Yeah. One of the things Christine's done a lot of recently is she's really gotten into photography more than she had previously, and we have a whole bunch of pictures from this year and from the last couple years of a lot of the stuff that we see. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of what the talk is that we're giving is about, is really the wildlife and the nature and the surroundings.
As well as a little bit of like the history of the boat and what it looks like and all that. And a little bit for everybody.
Right. Yeah. And again, just a reminder that you spent 8 years lovingly rebuilding this boat. So I guess that's one thing a lot of people will want to know about is, why do you do this? What is it that is so beautiful up there? You mentioned the wildlife, but personally, what do you respond to in that world and that landscape that you would want to be on a boat to experience it?
I think for me, what I respond to the most is being out in nature. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. And to be in a place where there are very few other people, there are roadless areas, there are ancient forests. You can wake up in the morning, you can stretch out, and you can see some grizzly bears on the beach. You can see whales out in the harbor. And it's just a really fascinating place to be. It's a place that you can actually feel really small in. So we'll go up to some tidewater glaciers, so the type of glacier that calves icebergs into the water, and you can we'll sit there like a quarter mile away from it, and we'll just watch the ice calve. And you can sometimes feel the vibrations from when the water or from the icebergs hit the water, and the sounds that it makes, and the groanings and the popping, and it's just such a very different place. And I think for me, it just it calls me.
I think people can feel that and understand why you ended up there in Alaska. How about you, Jeffrey? What do you respond to in that world?
I really like that everything in that world is really new. Like geologically, it's really new. When you're in one of these fjords, there occasionally are rock slides. There's all this stuff. You can see the progression of where the glacier was a few years ago and how the life is growing back in there. And so there's this amazing thing to be in a place like that where everything is just really new, and everywhere where you turn is really dramatic to look at.
Mm-hmm. And you find that obviously you've worked in boats in different places with different coastlines, and the water feels differently. What is it about captaining a boat in this particular area? I guess all the things that you see like that, but how is the water and the climate different?
We get a lot of people who come with us because it's so different from, say, here to there. Like, I really like here, the water is quite shallow. It's like there's a lot of muddy water. The trees are growing right in the edge of the water.
And there's a lazy field.
and it's geologically, it's old. Mm-hmm. And there it's just really interesting because it's new in a lot of ways. And there's lots of in the areas we operate in, the peaks around the sides are 2,000 to 5,000 feet high and are snow covered. And a lot of times in the fjords, our depth sounder stops working because it's over the maximum depth that it'll read at 600 or 800 feet. A lot of the stuff is over 1,000 feet deep. And a lot of the times you can be right up next to the side of that, right up next to a rocky wall, and it'll be 300 or 400 feet deep right there. And
you don't get that captaining a boat in Louisiana.
No.
It's a little different.
It's a little different show here.
Yeah, it is. But it was interesting earlier when we were talking about how many connections you make in that world of boat building and captaining boats and everything, and how often you do encounter people from South Louisiana, because there obviously are so many boat builders and companies down here. And so you've encountered quite a few of those people in your work.
Yeah, and actually I've run a couple different tour boats in various places. And worked on them on the coast of Maine as well as on the Washington coast. Boats were built right here within 50 miles of this spot, and lots of names that people would know. And it's just really interesting to have that connection with that.
Absolutely.
Kind of.
Well, I'm sure a number of those people or people, you know, in that world will so enjoy your talk. If you are just tuning in, my guests, Christine and Jeffrey Smith, will be giving a talk at the Lafayette Public Library, the South Regional Library on Johnston Street, about their experience rebuilding this wooden boat from 1929 that has its original engine in it. And they will have copies of their book that Christine wrote called More Faster Backwards, Rebuilding David B., about the David B.'s restoration. You'll have photographs of the boat and things that you see up there along the coast. And anything else you want to add that people might find interesting that you'll be talking about?
We have lots of interesting little stories to go with a lot of the pictures. There are a lot of amazing things happen to you when you're out cruising around just looking for wildlife. And we've got all kinds of cool stories that go with the pictures.
I imagine some people wonder how far do you go out? How far can this boat go out from the coast? Or do you hug the coast?
So that area is really amazing because there are so many inside and protected waterways. It's not quite like the intercoastal waterway here, but there's protection in almost all the area we go into. And so on one of our trips, on our way from Washington up to Alaska, there are a couple places where we're actually on the open ocean for less than 6 hours. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it, it's all in protected areas where there's at least one big island or mountain range between us and the actual open ocean. So it's pretty amazing and protected there.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're braving the storms
in
the sea. I mean, how much can a boat like the David B. withstand? I mean,
we've been in some pretty unpleasant weather that was like 10 to 12 foot seas. And I'm sure it's done that kind of thing a lot in its life prior to us. Yeah. And it didn't seem to be too unhappy with it.
What was it used for in the very beginning? What was it built for?
It was built for a company called Libby McNeil Libby, and they had a bunch of salmon operations up in Bristol Bay in Alaska. And so what it was used for was not as a fishing boat itself, but it was used to tow 32-foot-long sailboats out to where the fishing grounds were. And that was part, there was a federal regulation that they could only fish under sail. They couldn't fish under power. And so it was used that way as basically a towboat until 1951, when the rules changed and they could have motors in their boats. And then the boat went up onto the beach and stayed there for 30 years.
Until you all fell in love with it.
Well, there were a couple other people in between there.
Yeah.
Well, there was a woman who was working up there, who was fishing, who loved the boat and bought it from the cannery. And she patched it up and brought it back to Washington. And we actually just recently got a really amazing picture of her in her early 20s on the day that they launched the boat again in 1981, with the boat in the background showing, you know, like them getting ready to launch it again. And so she brought it down to the Seattle area, and then it had a couple owners in between then, and it kind of kicked around and didn't do too much, and that's when we ended up finding it.
You're not the first young people who have been drawn to that boat.
Exactly, and not the only ones to save it.
Well, it must have quite a spirit then that it's drawn so many people like yourselves who have such a love for it. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about a wooden boat called the David B. that was restored by my guests, Christine and Jeffrey Smith, who will be giving a talk at the South Regional Library this Sunday, 2 o'clock. All are invited. It's open to everybody. You'll see some great photographs of the boat, hear about the history of it, and some wonderful stories. As you see, it's a rabbit hole of stories that they have.
They're
about
endless.
So we look forward to that. If you'd like to know a little bit more, you can call the South Regional Library or go to their website. Well, thank you both for coming by, taking a moment to come and talk to us. And you did mention that you got to go on Lake Martin. And so we hope you do have a great time while you're in South Louisiana and get to explore some of the waterways here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. This evening, author Rita Costello will be giving a talk at Oliver Hall Auditorium on the UL campus. Rita is widely published. She's co-editor of a poetry anthology, Ben Don't Shatter. She's a professor at McNeese. All are invited to attend her reading, 7 o'clock this evening. And an opening that will take place at the Hilliard University Art Museum tomorrow, Friday. It's an exhibit that actually opened last weekend, but it is a public opening tomorrow night. The public is invited from 6 until 8 at the Hilliard on the UL campus. The exhibit, Linda Free's Holy Memories and Earthly Delights, is a comprehensive look at Linda's work over the past 40 years. She is Professor Emerita here at UL Lafayette. It features over 60 photographs and paintings from her life. You can also look to HilliardMuseum.org for a complete listing of activities and other exhibits that are on display. In Lake Charles, the Children's Theater Company will open Alice in Wonderland. That will be at Central School Arts and Humanities and will run through the weekend. For further information, the website is childrenstheater.cc. At Vermilionville, an event entitled Celebration de la Danse will take place from 10 until 4 o'clock. It features dance demonstrations. There's an exhibit of Louisiana dance halls. There will be book sales of books inspired by traditional dance. And there will be a public dance featuring Cajun, Creole, and Native American musicians playing live music. Cinema on the Bayou will have a special event commemorating the 50th anniversary of Leonard Forrest's documentary Les Acadiens de la Dispersion. For the first time, you can see it with English subtitles at Vermilionville's Performance Center. That will be at 7 o'clock on Saturday. On the UL campus on Saturday, the Faculty Chamber Music Recital will take place 7:30 in Angel Hall's Choral Room. It features Mike Blaney, Jennifer Kasson, Molly Goforth, Lucas Muntz, and Susie Garcia. All are invited to attend that concert. For a listing of programs on KRVS, please stop by our website, krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button. Please stay with us this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7 o'clock, it's La Vianera, Earthbeat at 8, Franco Mix at 9, and then the Vermilion Sports Show at 11 o'clock. In just a moment, we'll join NPR's All Things Considered. Thank you.
Enjoy Zydeco blues and old school R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
Dirty Rice, satisfying your Louisiana music R&B since 1991. Join either me, Bill Bolins, or Mr. Lee Klein Peter for the best in Louisiana music. Cajun, Zydeco, blues, swamp pop, you name it. We got a whole lot of rock and roll, too. That's Dirty Rice, every Saturday night at 8:30 to 10 p.m. right here on KRVS 88.7 FM and on the internet at krvs.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.